Wisconsin's recall election is tomorrow. Are you ready to vote? Did you already vote? What is the issue that matters the very most to you? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, June 4th. We have a special hour-long pre-recall election edition of our state capitol report for you this hour to discuss the major issues and the latest news involving the campaigns of Governor Scott Walker and Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, as well as the races for lieutenant governor and the four state Senate districts that are also on the ballot tomorrow. Both sides have been predicting a close race, and both sides are trying to get their supporters to the polls and spent this last weekend before the race stumping all over Wisconsin. We'll bring you up to date, and our two guests will answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Joining us is Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. Good morning, Sean.
Morning.
And also with us is Joe Foy, who is Assistant Professor of American Democracy and Media Studies at UW Parkside. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, nice to have both of you here. It's really an exciting time around Wisconsin, that's for sure. Sean, you spent the weekend running around the state following the campaigns?
Yeah, and at this point, both candidates are really trying to get their supporters to just keep at it. And so you had them meeting with campaign volunteers in a variety of settings. Governor Scott Walker was in Fitchburg last night. He dropped in on a GOP call center there where volunteers are making get-out-the-vote calls. And he presented it as a choice in this election, a choice between, you know, whether you adopt his budget repair bill, his collective bargaining bill, and the savings to local governments therein, or whether you go backwards.
We have the clearest choice we probably will ever have here in Wisconsin. And it's about whether or not we go back to those days when a handful of special interests controlled what happened at the state and the local level.
No.
Or instead, do we take this positive foundation that we built together, put the power back in the hands of the hardworking taxpayers, and move our state forward? I want to move forward. How about you?
Yeah!
Sound fired up.
And Tom Barrett spoke to supporters in Oshkosh at a coffee shop there, and he also said it was a choice, and he framed it differently. He pointed out the campaign contributions that Governor Walker has received from wealthy donors, billionaire donors, out-of-state donors, and said this was an election that provided a choice between them and the middle class.
Are we going to control the future of the state, the people of the state of Wisconsin, or is it going to be a billionaire who may have never set a foot in this state? That's how basic this difference is. It's about our values, it's about our state, it's about our children, and it's about our future. Let's get out there, let's win this election for the people of Wisconsin. Thank you very much.
They're fired up, too.
Yeah, so there's obviously energy on both sides there.
Wow. It sounds like both Governor Walker and Mayor Barrett, Professor Foy, were sort of stating what's at stake during this election.
Yeah, and I think that it's very telling that what Governor Walker wants to do is make it a choice, of course, between his policies and really the policies of Democratic administrations of the past, whereas what Tom Barrett is doing is really framing this as Walker yes or no. And so Walker wants to make this a race between him and Tom Barrett, and Barrett wants to keep the focus just entirely on Walker's policies as a way of really framing the election and moving forward.
Yeah, why do you suppose Tom Barrett wants to do that?
Well, I think in particular it's just a lot easier, to make the choice, to focus the recall and concentrate the recall on Walker, on the policies, because that's, of course, what, was initially driving all of this. It wasn't a love of Tom Barrett that caused people to sign the recall petition. So I think keeping the focus really on Scott Walker is a really key strategy for him in order to be able to try to mobilize people moving forward. Because for really a lot of the supporters of Barrett, they would have been supporters of any Democratic candidate that would have challenged Scott Walker. And so I think that's really where he's going to have the greatest inroads, especially amongst those very few people who might still consider themselves to be independent or undecided.
I know also, Sean, that we had former presidents coming to town, coming to Wisconsin, and rising stars of the Republican Party, governors from other states coming to Wisconsin. What did you cover those?
Chuck Quirenbach covered both of those. He was a busy man last week, buzzing around the Milwaukee area. Former President Bill Clinton rallied supporters in Milwaukee. And this is an area where Democrats are really hoping to get out the vote in a presidential election when turnout is higher in Wisconsin. Turnout in Milwaukee is up. And, you know, you look at the presidential elections over the past few decades, they've gone well for Democrats. Close, but they've gone their way. And so Democrats are trying to get voters who maybe vote there in November elections to vote here in this June election. And that was the message that Bill Clinton was there to deliver, especially to minority voters.
If you like the idea that it should be harder for the young, the poor, the minorities, the first generation of immigrants to vote, by all means, stay home Tuesday. If you know that's a loser for America, and you look around this crowd, and you see our youth, you see our vitality, you see our diversity, show up Tuesday and elect Tom Barrett governor.
And South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, who's been a vocal opponent of unions in her state, very much parroted some of the remarks of the governor lately in terms of the stakes of this election and the forward-backward message.
The country is watching. And what are they watching? They are watching, are you going to reward the courage that he showed? Are you going to respond to the results he gave you? Are you going to go back and let it go back to where it was?
And you've also had other people coming into town. Recently, you had Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley, who's head of the Democratic Governors Association. He was in town to pledge support of that organization. And kind of rally the troops a little bit, say, hey, you know, we're getting outspent, but don't worry, we've got a good ground game. Also, Reverend Jesse Jackson in town to, get the minority community in Milwaukee to vote.
Yeah, well, the stakes are certainly high for Wisconsin, but apparently the nation is watching, Professor Foy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are really three reasons why this seemingly has really strong national implications. The first reason is, of course, looking ahead at the presidential election. And, the sort of prevailing wisdom is that if Scott Walker can win this recall election, especially by, a strong showing, then that may put Wisconsin in play then for Mitt Romney. Right now, Barack Obama has slightly over a 4% advantage in the state, but they sort of are seeing this as a barometer or a test case. I think a second reason why you see individuals like Governor Nikki Haley of South Carolina and other governors, Bobby Jindal, Chris Christie, have made their way to Wisconsin is because they see this as being sort of a test case as well in terms of, what exactly can a governor do? How much can a governor work with some of these budgetary issues and to what extent are the voters going to reward or punish that? Mm-hmm. I think the final sort of issue is really the strength of independent external spending apart from campaigns and sort of evaluating, just how strong those are in terms of influencing and determining the outcome of elections. So all of those things are in play right now, which is why I think that the governor was right. I mean, the nation is watching for all those reasons.
We had a caller who just decided to hang up. Maybe he thought his question was answered, but I didn't hear it yet. He wanted to know what effect might these visiting governors, campaigning governors from other states, have on Wisconsin's race. Do voters in Wisconsin care if these governors come in from other states?
But I think that there's a little bit of the star appeal. You get these individuals who you've seen on national television that you've heard about that make these appearances, and so I think that more than anything, what it does is it draws people into speeches, it draws people to rallies that may not have otherwise gone. It attracts news media attention a lot more than if just individual candidates we're doing things. And so from that respect, it helps in terms of that mobilization, interest, and attention. And that's why I think that does have a significant effect.
Yeah. Sean, I did hear on the news this morning that Governor Walker is asking, why didn't President Obama come to Wisconsin, especially since he was campaigning in neighboring Minnesota? Former President Bill Clinton did come. Do we know why President Obama didn't come?
I mean, we don't know. You can take guesses. I mean, it's a risky call coming here now, given how close it is. You know, even if you presume the best polls for Barrett, they are close. And so for the president to come here when he has an election he wants to win in November, could put him in a position where he would, see a loss or a perceived loss. And so there has been sort of a hands-off approach from the president here so far, especially when he was so close. Bill Clinton, though, was in here last week, and there was some, mm-hmm. it seemed like a deficit of national figures coming in for the Dems, and then all of a sudden we had quite a few come in last week and toward the weekend. And then, in terms of what these governors can do, aside from, what was already mentioned, they generally host fundraisers while they're here, too. And the Republican Governors Association in particular is, pretty formidable fundraising apparatus. And mm-hmm. you can imagine that the governor would be at fundraisers for them at some point.
We just saw a new poll. You mentioned the polls, Sean. And yes, many polls have shown Governor Walker with a lead over Tom Barrett, some Democratic or Barrett internal polling showing it much closer. This one is from that public policy polling, which is, I believe, a Democratic polling outfit. It does show Republican Governor Scott Walker leading Democrat Tom Barrett 50% to 47%. So that one is a little closer than some of the 6 or 7 point leads that we've seen last week. Do we know, Professor Foy, how close this election is going to be?
Well, we know it's very close, but what we don't know is really actually there's a percentage of the population that we're really not certain about. And that's, the individuals who, voted in 2008, voted for President Obama in the state in 2008, but then did not turn out to vote then in 2010. And the question then really becomes, how many of those individuals that stayed home in 2010 are going to turn out and vote? And right now, none of these polls really capture that kind of nuance because the polls, in order to try to be accurate, they're trying to get the pulse of not only registered voters, but voters who are likely to vote. And that's kind of where they're making their determinations. But the problem is, we just have no idea how many people are going to turn out and vote. What numbers are we going to see? And so those aren't clearly captured in there. And so when we think about a margin of error of roughly 4% in most of these polls, all of these become within the margin of error. And in part, that's due to that segment of the population that nobody's really certain what are they going to do tomorrow.
Government Accountability Board is predicting a 60 to 65% voter turnout, Sean. So that's way more than usual for a gubernatorial race.
Yeah, gubernatorial race generally is around 50%. In 2010, when Governor Scott Walker won the first time, it was around 49% turnout. The high watermark over the last 50 years, I think, was around 52%. Going back to 2006, it was 50 plus, a little bit higher than in 2010. So, any one of those numbers, nowhere near 60 to 65%, that's presidential turnout there. But even the Government Accountability Board acknowledges that, generally when they make these predictions, they're basing it off of history. And there's no history here because we've never had a gubernatorial recall election before. In fact, there's only been three in the country. So, it's been said many times, uncharted territory.
We are talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, and Joseph Foy, Assistant Professor of American Democracy and Media Studies at UW Parkside, during a pre-recall election edition of our state capitol report. We will talk about some of the issues that are making news as this recall campaign winds down. Tomorrow is the day. We'll take some of your questions after we take a short break. Partly sunny today, a chance of morning showers, a few thunderstorms in western and northwestern Wisconsin, possible as well. Highs today will be in the 70s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, reminding you that tomorrow night, starting at 8 o'clock, the Ideas Network will bring you live coverage of the Wisconsin recall election results, hosted by Wisconsin Public Radio, Sean Johnson, and Wisconsin Public Television's Frederica Freiberg. So join us for results, analysis, and interviews with reporters and candidates from across the state during our election coverage, recall election coverage, Tuesday night, tomorrow night, starting when the polls close at 8 here on the Ideas Network. It's going to be a busy day for you, Sean, tomorrow, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's always an exciting time around election time, but this one particularly exciting. I wanted to ask you one thing about this Get Out the Vote effort that we're seeing going on so much, Sean, before we talk about some of the other issues in the campaign. A lot of people received, including yours truly, a mailer on Friday and Saturday from a group called the Greater Wisconsin Committee. It was trying to encourage people to get out to vote, but what it did is it had the names of our neighbors and whether or not they voted in the past two elections. And it said, hey, you know, knock on one of your neighbor's doors who didn't vote and tell them to come vote with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little disconcerting to see that.
Yeah, there maybe is a fine line between a sophisticated get out the vote operation and, you know, that sort of invasion of privacy. These are public lists. I mean, the mailer that was sent out by the Greater Wisconsin Committee is based on public information that you can buy from the Government Accountability Board, or you can access these addresses individually for free. So it's not like they, you know, they stole the info or they're you know, it's any kind of spying or anything like that. I mean, it's public info presented in this format. Though, yeah, I've heard some anecdotal feedback that it rubs some people the wrong way. What they're trying to do, obviously, is get the turnout for this election to look more like 2008 than it did in 2010, because Democrats did very well in 2008 and obviously very poorly in 2010. And so this is it's a very precise, advanced way to do it, but
It ticked a few people off.
Yeah, I mean, you're not the only one who had that reaction.
Yeah. It showed whether you voted, too, in the last 2 years, which is, I know it's public record, but it is a little bit different to see your name and address and your voting record on a mailer. But in any case, both sides really want to get out the vote, Professor Foy.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I'm holding that same flyer here in my hand with my name on it and names of my neighbors. And I know that I talked to a friend and a colleague in Green Bay who, you know, had gotten the same one in Milwaukee had gotten the same one. You know, and I think that there was that kind of dual reaction of, you know, this is a really intelligent way of being able to sort of let people know this is your civic duty. You know, these are the reasons why elections are won or lost. But I also do think that it had some of the effect of making it feel as though people were being pitted against one another. Recently on the Waukesha patch, there was an electronic link where you could, I think the heading was, go and see which of your neighbors have donated to Tom Barrett's campaign, right? And so it's this idea then that in a really divisive, really vitriolic environment politically that we have in the state, I think that there is that fear that what now is happening is that you're sort of pitting neighbors against neighbors, you know, you're really challenging people to make it personal, and I think that is going to rub a lot of people the wrong way.
And I mean, you've seen a similar reaction as the names are being posted of who signed the recall,
mm-hmm.
Where it's been a negative reaction. People feel like you're pitting neighbor against neighbor. And, it's I guess it's fitting that it's happening in the same election.
Let me bring in a caller before our news break who has a question about the job numbers. Paul in Richland Center, good morning.
Good morning. I can also report that same flyer hit the Richland Center area because mm-hmm. I got one too. So, and it was disconcerting to many people here. Yeah, my question is dealing with this shadowy job figures number, and it's really not the number itself that I'm calling about. I have never heard any kind of a discussion about what types of jobs supposedly have been created. And what I mean by that is, are these living wage type of jobs in unionized places, which I doubt considering his agenda against unions, or are they low pay, minimum wage, temporary seasonal? For example, Wisconsin Dells has just started up in my backyard for the season. Well, hundreds of people have been hired there, but
right,
they're low pay, temporary, seasonal, no benefits. I live in the southwest part of the state, and I certainly haven't seen any kind of, like, huge influx of job openings in this part of the state.
All right, we get you, Paul. Well, what about the debate over those job creation numbers, Sean?
Yeah, okay, so the governor last week said that the Bureau of Labor Statistics had verified the state's job numbers, and these are the job numbers that his administration released recently. They're based off of unemployment insurance administrative records, which is a sampling basically of 96% of employers, more like a census than a survey. And it showed, according to the governor's office, that in 2011, between December of 2010 and December 2011, Wisconsin created 23,600 plus jobs. Those numbers are still unverified by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. I mean, a lot of people called the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They received many calls from Wisconsin that day, and the Bureau said that they can't comment on those numbers until after the election.
So they have not been verified.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if these are verified, there'd be no argument over whether this was a better way to look at jobs than monthly surveys, because it's a detailed way of looking at job numbers. So what does it mean? I mean, if you look at the job numbers that the governor's thrown out there, 23,000 plus in his first year in office, compare that to Jim Doyle's last year in office, where by the same measure, Wisconsin created 32,700 plus jobs.
Yeah.
So this is not an astronomical figure by any means.
Only 15 seconds. Do we know what kind of jobs?
Yeah, and there's not a detailed, like, are these union jobs or not? We do know that according to the governor's numbers, more than 11,000 of the jobs came in manufacturing.
All right. We will continue talking about the recall race after we check the latest news. This is a special election eve edition of the State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson and Joseph Foy, assistant professor of American Democracy and Media Studies at UW Parkside. If you have a question for either of our guests about the issues in the race or what is at stake, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. So how confident or nervous are you about your candidate's chance of winning tomorrow? And what is the issue that is most important to you in this recall race? Or I should say recall races. It's not just the race for governor. We have a race for lieutenant governor, and we have four state Senate districts that will be going to the polls as well tomorrow, including where you are, Professor Foy. How's that? How is the race in your district going between the Republican incumbent, Senator Van Wongard, and the Democratic challenger, John Lehman?
Well, it's gathering a lot of national attention. There have been, you know, over $1 million of external expenditures, you know, when you combine the expenditures for both sides going into that race. And it's also become, you know, very, very divisive. We talked before about one of the gubernatorial mailings for Get Out the Vote. Several controversial mailings have been part of this campaign as well, mailings depicting a woman being assaulted from behind by a man that just sort of in big letters that says, "You're not safe," thanks to John Lehman. And it, you know, references, you know, a bill in 2009 that was, you know, part of the budgetary allocations with the prison system and trying to reduce expenditures there. And so here we've seen a very tense, very focused, very divisive race. And I think in part it's because out of all of the Senate recall elections, this one is the closest. It's the one that may actually go to the Democratic challenger. And if that's the case, then of course that tips the balance of the state Senate to the Democratic Party. And so we are seeing a lot of focus, a lot of attention on this particular race because it's close and because of the potential implications.
Yeah, and that's right, Sean. That is the most competitive of the districts as far as we know.
It's what you keep hearing about, mm-hmm. is that's the district that the parties are watching. And in the limited polling that's come out on these districts, and there's really been very little to look at, that was the race that was closest. As far as probably the number two race that Democrats are looking at, it's up in Eau Claire, where Kristen Dexter is challenging Terry Moulton. And that's a rematch for them. They had faced off in previous election when they were both, when Terry Moulton was the incumbent. And Kristen Dexter was challenging him for the assembly. She beat him. He came back and then won the Senate seat in 2010. So that's probably the number two race in the mix of these. In Wausau, where Democrats felt like they, at one point they were talking about that as their number one. They're now saying that Donna Seidel, has ground to gain with Jerry Petrowski, the Republican, in that race. And sort of the sea change in that race was when the incumbent senator, Pam Galloway, decided not to run and Petrowski stepped in. And then the race, as far as drama goes, probably the most interesting race between Lori Compass and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald. Lori Compass, organized the recall, really didn't get a lot of party support for this. And the district is pretty staunchly Republican, and she's running against the Senate Republican Majority Leader, who had such a prominent role in getting the collective bargaining bill through. She has red hot support over there in her base, but the district is very Republican, and Fitzgerald's supporters are pretty fired up too.
Yeah, and as for Lieutenant Governor, that one seems to be a little bit under the radar. But I don't know—is everybody expecting Professor Foy that they'll just be a party line vote tomorrow? Whoever you vote for governor, you would vote for the same party for Lieutenant Governor?
Yeah, I can't imagine that anything but the coattail effect is going to determine the lieutenant governor position, unless people just completely forget to vote for the lieutenant governor and that skews the numbers. I can't see it going really any other way.
Yeah, we did have a straw poll, which is totally unscientific, on the air last week, and there were a couple of callers who said, I'm going to vote for either Tom Barrett or Scott Walker for governor, and then the opposite candidate for lieutenant governor, saying that they wanted, more balance and bipartisanship in the executive office.
It's not unheard of. I mean, it is Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and people have had a tendency to favor divided government over years past. I mean, we forget about that because, we have this session that was dominated by Democrats, followed by this session that was dominated by Republicans. It normally isn't that way in Wisconsin. So it's, I don't think it's unheard of. But yeah, I think the coattail effect is going to be pretty strong.
Well, we have a lot of other issues to talk about, and I think let's take a caller who has a question about an issue. Linda in Monroe. Hi, Linda.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, gentlemen. It takes money to run a campaign in both political parties, and must be done fair for both groups. Now, since Governor Walker's John Doe probe, where some have been convicted, some have been indicted by the FBI and the Milwaukee County District Attorney, and 13 have asked for immunity, this sounds a lot like the Nixon-Watergate hearings, where he stalled it off long enough to get elected to his second term. Then he couldn't cover it up any longer, and when there was talk of impeachment, he resigned. Now, I think if the voters of Wisconsin are going to have trust in their elected officials, there's no way they can trust Governor Walker to do his job fairly until this John Doe probe has been completed. Now, what do you think?
Well, let's first find out what exactly is new, Sean, with the John Doe probe.
And first, I'll actually say, that investigation is going to play out at its own pace, period. It's not proceeding with tomorrow's election in mind. Hasn't been. When Democrats launched this recall, one of the things that some of them were mentioning was that this investigation was out there and that would bolster their case against Walker. It's kind of slowed down in terms of developments. We did have a number of actual new developments, though, last week, or at least we learned new things. You know, through court filings, we learned that when another top Walker aide's house was raided last year, that there were other people's houses who were raided to get evidence, including Brett Davis, Walker's Medicaid director. We learned the 13th person has been granted criminal immunity in the investigation. Fran McLaughlin, his spokeswoman in Milwaukee County when he was Milwaukee County executive. And we learned that the governor, I mean, this is public, it's out there, that he's transferred another $100,000 to his legal defense fund on top of $60,000 that he had already transferred to that fund. You know, the law is pretty limited on and when you can establish one of those legal defense funds. And so that's all real information that's coming out, new developments, and not just stuff that's been kind of churned up by the Barrett campaign in order to you know, get votes.
Well, why is Governor Walker transferring $100,000 from his campaign fund to his defense fund?
As you can imagine, the governor's downplaying it, and he's basically just saying it's so that his attorneys can cooperate with the investigation.
I've said repeatedly for the last half a year or so that we've been in a position to cooperate with them and literally look through hundreds, if not thousands, of documents. I think it's very clear. I don't think the taxpayers of the state want the governor spending hours, if not days, going through the details of that. That's what we have counsel to do and to look through that. That's what we're doing right now.
And, you know, when that idea was mentioned to Democrat Tom Barrett, I think it's fair to say he was almost incredulous, said that that's a lot of money to just be looking at compliance.
We're not talking about a parking ticket. There's something going on here. You're paying high-priced federal criminal defense attorneys $300, $400, $500 an hour. I don't even know how much you pay them. He's doing that because there is something he is concerned about. And it is time for him to tell the people of this state exactly what's going on.
So why isn't Governor Walker telling people what's going on, as Mayor Barrett keeps on asking?
What's the benefit to him, I suppose? I mean, there was that question was posed in the last week's debate, actually, by moderator Mike Boucher. He got fairly specific on why can't the governor talk more, because that's been what the mayor's been pressing all this time, is that you need to come forward, be straight with voters. You want us to trust you on June 5th. Trust us with this information. And the governor has said, you know, repeatedly that, you know, he can't because it violates the rules of an investigation like this. And so Mike Boucher pressed him on that and really laid out the question last week in the debate.
You said that you're not in a position where you can comment on these things, but today there was an article in the Journal Sentinel, and Judge Nettesheim, who's been involved in the John Doe, said, you know, if you haven't testified in front of him, you're not bound by the secrecy orders. Right. If you're not the target of the investigation, which you just said you were not, right, you're not bound by a secrecy order. You could release emails conceivably. He didn't use you by name, but he said a third party could conceivably. So why haven't you done that?
Because throughout this process of cooperating with John Chisholm's office and his staff, he's asked us not to comment on the particulars so that we're in a position to be able to. All those other things you mentioned are accurate. This is through the district attorney's office.
So, I mean, the governor's now saying that it's, you know, it's not that he's bound by the rules of the John Doe, but that it is the district attorney who has asked him not to comment. The district attorney has not commented on the investigation. And so, you know, he's not over there in the governor's corner saying, that's right, I told him to say that. I mean, the DA John Chisholm in Milwaukee has been mum about this.
Yeah. Well, Professor Foy, what's your take on this John Doe investigation and the role it's playing in the recall election? We heard from Linda, our caller, who's, you know, very upset that this is going on as the recall is going on, wants to know more before casting a vote. But how big an issue will this be in tomorrow's vote?
Well, these are sort of parallel issues that then have that kind of intersection of tomorrow's vote. I mean, you have the recall, which is separate from the legal proceedings, And, you know, and obviously they need to be, you know, maintained as separate, and we need to allow, as Sean mentioned earlier, the legal proceedings to, you know, really proceed at their own pace, and make sure that, that there are not political considerations involved when trying to investigate potential criminal activity. But where there is intersection and where there's crossover, it, you know, becomes really an issue of trust for voters. And the question becomes, you know, does this then cast a shadow of doubt amongst voters as to the legitimacy of Governor Walker's administration? I don't think that amongst individuals who identify themselves, you know, as Walker supporters, as even strong to moderate Republican or conservative in the state, it doesn't seem to have affected their support for Governor Walker really at all. He remains incredibly popular. Amongst those individuals who identify themselves as Democrat, strong, moderate, as liberal as Barrett supporters, you know, those individuals already have reason to cast doubt on the governor and have already challenged his legitimacy. So, you know, whether or not this is going to affect that very narrow ground in the middle, you know, it's really hard to say. But it could have potential implications for casting doubt on the legitimacy of the administration in looking at tomorrow's recall.
Joseph Foy is an assistant professor of American Democracy and Media Studies at UW-Parkside, and Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. They are both with us for this hour for a special hour-long edition of our state capitol report on this day before Wisconsin's recall election. We'll take more of your calls and talk about more of the issues that are making news in just a moment. Checking our weather forecast for today, it's going to be partly sunny with a chance of morning showers and a few thunderstorms in western and northwestern Wisconsin, possibly the rest of the state this afternoon. Highs will be in the 70s, but cooler near the Great Lakes. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's about 9 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Monday, June 4th. This is our state capitol report, talking with Sean Johnson and Joseph Foy. And Sean, let's talk a little bit about the highlights, the lowlights, the most important moments from the debate, the last debate last Thursday night before the recall.
Yeah, and we've got a couple clips here to play, fairly lengthy. And the, you know, one of the big hits, I guess, for the mayor, Tom Barrett, was when the discussion turned to the John Doe investigation. And you saw Governor Walker kind of try to turn it around to Milwaukee crime statistics. So the mayor saying, you know, Governor Walker, release more information about this John Doe investigation. Walker says, Mayor, release more information about your city's crime statistics, which the Journal Sentinel has said had been reported inaccurately. And so the mayor kind of used that to launch in to an attack on the governor.
He's running a commercial right now that shows a dead baby. He shows a picture of a dead baby. I mean, this is Willie Horton stuff. That baby died. The person who killed that baby was arrested by the Milwaukee police, was prosecuted by the Milwaukee County District Attorney. They did their job. But you know what they did wrong? After the baby died, they didn't change the code. It was a bureaucratic mistake, mm-hmm. And we said we'd fix that. And you're running a commercial attacking my integrity, claiming that I did something to do with this, and you know that's false. You know that's false. No, and you're running that commercial. You tell me whether you think I had anything to do with that.
No, I'm asking you to reveal.
I'll tell you right now, I had nothing to do with that. Look at that commercial.
No, but
you should be ashamed of that commercial, no, Scott Walker.
It's pretty emotional. You never know when politics is genuine emotion and when it's just put on. But it sure seemed like genuine emotion there from Tom Barrett in the way that he talked about that ad.
Yeah. I'm wondering, just before we go to another highlight, just to get Professor Foy's take on that particular moment, that particular issue in terms of the recall. Do you think voters are blaming Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett for this crime statistic reporting snafu?
I think that oftentimes commercials that can play on those kinds of emotions, whether we're talking about distorted realities or not, right? What it does is it creates perceptions in voters' minds that really make it personal. Barrett becomes the symbol for the bureaucratic snafu, right? And I think that those ads, as divisive and as vitriolic as they are, they have been proven to be effective. I mean, Willie Horton ad, has become the poster child for those kinds of divisive campaigns. But one reason why it has is because it was effective. And so there are reasons why people choose to run these kinds of ads. And we may despise the fact that there's so much negative advertising, but the reason why the money goes there is because those ads work.
Mm-hmm. And what did what was Governor Walker's strongest moment, Sean?
Well, I mean, Democrats really like that moment with the TV ad. They've been passing it around, and to them that was sort of the crescendo of the debate. The governor, his biggest attack on Tom Barrett of late has been that he has no plan. And so there was an exchange there during the debate where the governor really tried to pound that message home.
Today is the 50th day since the mayor was asked during the primary what his plan would be. Because if this is fundamentally about undoing what we've done over the last year and a half, I think the mayor has a moral obligation to tell people, not just in hype, but what exactly would he have done differently. We haven't heard that, and I don't think we're going to hear that in the campaign trail. I think all we can guess is he's going to do what he did in Milwaukee, which raised taxes and fees.
Mayor.
Well, as a mayor of the city, I balanced budget 8 years in a row, and I had as my priority public safety. And we were able to accomplish that. And the taxes were very comparable to the taxes as they went in the county. Very comparable. Very comparable. Take a look at those. You'll see them. And the difference was he wouldn't lead. He wouldn't lead. He'd play Pontius Pilate and have the county board do it. And then he'd come back the next year and use their numbers. I'm a leader. I'm going to take responsibility for what I do. He would not take responsibility for that. But if you look at his first budget as county executive and his last budget as county executive, the ones that he introduced, it's $40 million higher. But you'd think that he had nothing to do with it. And then look at the state, $1.1 billion higher in spending. This budget, he spent $1.1 billion more than the last budget. That sounds like an increase in spending to me.
And again, to be clear, so everybody's clear here, the mayor doesn't have a plan, and all he's got is attacking me. That's what you just heard, loud and clear there.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of Barrett talking there to call it a governor's highlight. But, I mean, if you look at the way the governor's body language in that exchange, I mean, he was just the most comfortable there and, kind of seemed pleased as punch when the mayor got to the end of that and to deliver that line. See, still no plan.
Yeah. So what about the no plan blow, Professor Foy?
Well, this is where, I said towards the beginning, this is where Walker wants to make it a choice between himself and Barrett. Whereas Barrett has kept the focus entirely on Governor Walker or not. And that's because, when you can make it a choice, sort of framing it like the general election of 2010, that's where I think Walker sees his strongest advantage moving into tomorrow's election.
And, this is a choice by the mayor, too, in terms of campaign strategy. If you go back to 2010, he was the one who was out with more detailed plans to begin with and, felt like it didn't go so well for him. And at times he was actually ridiculed for having, a 68-page economic development plan, whereas the governor's plan was more of like a 3 or 5 point brown bag promise. It's choices that the campaigns have made. This time around, Tom Barrett is not playing that game, and so the governor's trying to attack him on it.
Very quickly, Sean, what's on the campaign itinerary today?
They have about a dozen stops between them, Governor Walker and Mayor Barrett. Governor Walker's going to be in Fitchburg later today. To rattle off all the stops.
Yeah, but there's a lot. There's a lot of running around. And you will. Let me ask Professor Foy this. Is Sean going to have a really long night last night, long night tomorrow night for our election special?
I would anticipate he likely would. So drink a lot of coffee, get a lot of sleep.
Anything else, Sean?
No, I'm looking forward to it. And yeah. please tune in tomorrow night.
That's right. Tomorrow night, starting at 8, when the polls close, we will have Wisconsin Public Radio's Election Night Special here on the Ideas Network. And, by the way, we will, on Wednesday morning, have all sorts of reaction and analysis. We'll let Sean sleep in on Wednesday morning, but we will have different analysts and guests and reporters from 6 until 9 on Wednesday morning. Thanks to Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Government Reporter, and to Joel Foy, Assistant Professor of American Democracy and Media Studies at UW-Parkside. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.